folks to be aware of some of the things that they should know before they just, you know, take the microphone and launch on the air into whatever their program subject is.
I'm Alan Korn. I work with Michael with this station and with other stations in terms of getting the applications in and getting doing the legal work. My background is also with Free Radio Berkeley and the micro radio stuff. I understand there's some pirate antecedents maybe for some of you or people at the station. So, you know, that was kind of like no rules. This is to tell you what the rules are now that you've gone, you know, legit to some extent.
My name's Lisa Thomas. Myself and Margaret Pelletier are going to be doing one of the new programs on WCFC. And I just want to learn the rules, so join here.
Oh, I'm Jeff Moore. I'm going to be a programmer, hopefully at WGXC, although I think next year to warn them, because I was also a programmer at WBCR LP. I've actually probably been on here close to 100 times, but I really don't have too much an idea of the FCC compliance. I mean, I'm not saying I know what not to say on the air, but I would be interested in a little, just finding out a little bit more.
Ed Flick, future programmer, WGNC music show. Haven't been on the air since college, so just need to know the basic stuff.
I'm Richard Roth, and also a programmer, and I've never been on the air, so.
Hillary Corson, like these guys.
Wow. Same thing, ditto. I'm Kieran.
Where's everybody?
Maria Fiori, I'm also a programmer. I want to know. Cheryl Mr. Masterson, future programmer, programming music. I spent 12 years at WWA at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, where it was community and student radio, so we were nothing but compliant because it always smacked us in the face when someone went on air and did something really bad. So this is really just a refresher for me.
I'm Margot Pelletier. I'm doing a program with Lisa Thomas called The Score, which will be on the soundtracks to film and television shows. And I've been on the air a few times just being interviewed, and no one ever took me aside and said, you can't say this or don't do that. So, and actually, my view of the station was more like the one you were talking about, the initial grassroots thing where you could just do your thing. So I'm glad to be here and find out that's not true.
Hey, Jim McCabe, like some others, I'll be a music programmer on WGXC and also last on the radio in college, so interested to find out where that fine line is between what you can say and not say.
I'm Tatra Keats, a future GXC programmer. I had a third-class broadcaster's license in the 80s. I'm probably going to have some field recordings in my show, and I'm interested in any sort of legal consequence of releasing stuff, if I'm reading a text, stuff like that, and whatever else I need to know to be compliant.
Radioactive Gavin from Common Frequency, 10 years experience as a programmer, and I'm really concerned about the chilling effects of the language police on community radio. So I think it's really, really important that we arm ourselves with information, and I think people like Alan Korn and Michael Cousins have done some heroic work in their support of community radio. But I also think that long term we got to figure out a way to change the policies because I think at the station level it's really important that we don't silence ourselves, that we don't self censor, that we protect our freedom of our press, but that we also continue to be strong about what we say and what music we play.
My name is Eric Francis. I'm planning a public affairs program and to be a news consultant. I've been an investigative reporter and a reporter for many, many years. And it's interesting that we're starting this venture as you mentioned, this chilling effect is absolutely astonishing. It's worth looking that term up, the chilling effect. It's when you're scared to speak up. And what I tell my writers is there's anything anyone says is going to be offensive to someone. So the offensive part can't exactly be the metric, because someone's going to be offended. But then what do you do when we're basically living in a mental institution. If you flip through the cable channels, it's a cyborg out there in the media, and we ain't Fox News. I mean, you know, so onward.
Andrew Jaffe, I'm going to be a programmer on GXC in the spoken word and radio drama area, which is rife with pitfalls of this nature. And I've had a couple of series on distributed by NPR, and so which have been fairly okay and mainstream. And I'm actually on the other side. I want to find out where the cliff is, so I don't how far I can go up to the cliff. So I don't step over it, what I can tell my writers and my producers.
Do you want to speak
first?
No.
Is your name and are you
No.
No?
No.
Okay. Yeah. All right, excellent. Join us.
Just learning.
Okay, so I don't know if you guys want to jump in or if we should start on anything, but I think that one of the favorite areas, I stole your sheet from yesterday. I think that one of the areas that people often want to know about right off the bat is dealing with obscenity and indecency and profanity, because that seems to be a common line.
Well, that's one of the most fun things to talk about anyway.
Should we say that?
We could talk about that. This area has been heavily litigated because during the Bush administration, they had a working majority of the commission that was out there busting stations for bad language. That's one of the reasons that Howard Stern just gave up with radio and moved to satellite, which is not regulated in the same way. Broadcasting is... What's left of broadcasting is still regulated with these rules that do not apply to cable television, do not apply to satellite, do not apply to... the lyrics and the music that you can go down to the corner and purchase in this new store on CD. It's just broadcasting is in a unique category that way. And what has evolved is the Carlin decision in the late 70s established that the repetitive use of the so-called seven dirty words was prohibited. And that... through years and years was not enforced until they decided around during George W. Bush's first term that this was worth enforcing again. And, you know, since he owed a lot of his support to religious broadcasters and religious organizations, that made sense in terms of giving that constituency some red meat. So they started doing enforcement actions, and then as soon as they started doing it, the churches got organized to bombard them with letters and complaints about bad language or sexual references. And so they got a huge backlog of 200,000 or 300,000 of these complaints. No idea how to deal with them. And what made it worse is basically these complaints are looked at within a renewal period. Each station's license is good for 8 years. And then if you're renewed, you have another 8 years. And it's statutory law that they can't really look back past a renewal to see if a station has behaved badly. So the renewal cuts off their investigative powers. So... they had all these indecency complaints, and some of them were regarding these adorable little companies like CBS, GE, NBC. Everybody had these complaints pending, and what it started to do was screw up the whole renewal process. Until we've adjudicated the complaint, of which we have thousands, we're not going to be able to renew all these licenses. Then they came up with a gimmick where they would enter into a consent decree with the licensee to say that there would be a renewal without prejudice to them going back and mucking around in this area again after the renewal had occurred, which meant that they had to negotiate all these consent decrees, and it created more of a work burden on the staff than they had before. You know, when I was on the staff, there was a real doctrinaire right-winger attorney that I worked with who hated these cases from a First Amendment standpoint. And he was, a Republican, a paracheek, but he got assigned to do these indecency cases, and he hated them with a passion. One of the problems with these cases is there's really no clear standard. They have the seven dirty words, but an episodic utterance of one of the words is or is not actionable, or, you know, how many times do you have to say fuck before you're over the line, or if it's not quite in the safe harbor period from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m., but maybe it's at 9:30 p.m., do you have a little more leeway there? I mean, there are many really complicated issues in this area, and if the guidelines are unclear, then you take a cautious approach. You don't want to jeopardize the license. That's the chilling effect that you were talking about a couple of minutes ago. Exactly. So it'd be nice if we could tell you that there are bright lines and don't go over this point, because then you're going to be in trouble, or there's going to be a $100,000 fine, or the license renewal will get messed up. But we don't know. The one thing that has come out recently is that there was a case, we talked about this in the other session, there was a case that grew out of an awards program where Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie were accepting an award that had to do with the program The Simple Life, and Nicole Richie extemporized, I don't know why they call it The Simple Life. Have you ever tried to get shit out of a Prada purse? It's not so fucking simple.
Can you say that again?
It is funny, isn't it? I mean, we can laugh at that. That was a great joke.
Yeah.
Well, it was an enforcement proceeding, and they came in and they jumped all over Fox. In this case, Fox, that they had a proceeding, and then it went to the Circuit Court of Appeals in the Second Circuit, which is in New York City, and the Second Circuit includes the state of New York, includes where we are now. And the court said, you didn't give these licensees enough notice that you were going to bash people over, you know, one episode, so we're going to throw that out. And then the FCC appealed to the United States Supreme Court, and they said, well, there was enough notice. So now we're sending it back to the Court of Appeals to determine whether or not that violated the First Amendment rights of the broadcaster. And this time, the same panel, the same three-judge panel said, yes, that was a First Amendment violation. These rules are toast. We're not going to allow the commission to enforce them. They're going to have to go back and rewrite the whole thing or just throw this thing down. So now we have this crazy situation where in the Second Circuit, an episodic fuck here and there is not actionable. In other circuits, maybe it still is. And then the commission is going to have to decide whether they're going to appeal that case again to the United States Supreme Court, or they could just appeal it to the whole Second Circuit sitting, they say en banc, the whole where they'll have a bunch of judges, 9 or 10 judges looking at it. So that is where we're at on the episodic utterance front. There still may be a working majority of the FCC, including an otherwise sane commissioner named Michael Copps, that would try to keep this enforcement of indecency going. So we have to
pet project of his forever.
We have to worry about that too. So I mean, that's the state of the law on isolated instances.
Did it go to this Second Circuit because the awards show was broadcast from the region of the Second Circuit? How did it get to that? How did they get jurisdiction over it, whereas the Ninth Circuit wouldn't?
Because the papers were filed there by Fox and the other broadcasters.
Smart. So in other words, everybody's going
to
move to the Second Circuit.
They knew better than to file it in the D.C. Circuit, yes.
I want to take a step back from this, because this is all really good information, but I don't know how many of you are familiar with a little more of the context of this for you being on air specifically. And I just wanted to take a quick second touch on a couple of these. That obscenity and we can get into details of it, but essentially obscenity is criminal and not covered by the FCC. And we can get into the details of that.
We're talking about indecency.
Yeah, so an obscenity is not allowed. simply, but the question is when you actually encounter it, and that gets into the whole gray murky area. Indecency, which we can talk about, was it Miller versus California? I'm mixing up my case.
No, Miller was obscenity.
That was obscenity, right. That was obscenity, right.
I have the definition for obscenity right here if you want to hear it. It's,
yes.
It's you know, I mean, the famous definition is, you know, I know it when I see it, right, from the Supreme Court. But technically it's...
Bobby Stewart.
Thank you, yeah.
And it was porno.
It was pornography.
Pornography, okay. An average person applying contemporary community standards would find the material taken as a whole appeals to the prurient interest. It depicts describes in a patently offensive way sexual conduct specifically defined by applicable law, and its material as a whole that lacks serious literary, artistic, political, or scientific value.
Is that the Lemon standard?
No,
this is California.
How does free beer and hot wings get around that?
presumably
none of this is really relevant. It's just like free beer and hot wings can get on and talk about whacking ball sacks and stuff like that. Whereas if we were to get on and play some Last Poets, somebody would probably jump all over us.
I think Norm is making a reference to a local radio show. You guys probably don't know.
It's syndicated.
Oh, is it syndicated?
Yeah, I think it comes out of Philadelphia, actually.
Well, it is all complaint-driven. I mean, that's it. And it's, you know, if you have enemies, you know, they can file their complaints with the FCC and, you know, start a whole proceeding against you.
Where does content fall into this? For instance, if you're reading something by the poet Amiri Baraka, you know, we're talking, you know, you introduce it to your audience, reading it straight from, I mean, his stuff loses power if you don't have the fuck, the shit, the damn,
right.
Whatever. And he does get offensive, but within the context of what he's saying, relevant to your show, is there any kind of safe haven for a programmer?
Because we were talking about obscenity, let's make sure that that's cleared out of the way. Obscenity, Larry Flint needs to worry about obscenity. We don't. There's not going to be an obscenity conviction regarding any of this. And in fact, I don't know, it's debatable, but you might actually need a visual component. It may be impossible to have a crime of obscenity with just sound.
I don't think it would be difficult.
Sounds like a goal.
Convictions are very
impossible to get to reach that
howl.
We can do it.
Well, back in the 50s.
Well, I know the producer of Selected Shorts, you know that show? Mm-hmm. They bleep. And that's as literary a context.
Well,
as you
now
can
we're not
that,
talking
yeah.
about obscenity again. We're trying to clear
clear
just
obscenity
read the
out of the way.
Of
this
decency
is not
an
issue.
And that's what I was
an obscenity conviction in radio requires two things. It requires a United States attorney who has time on his hands or her hands to go and get an indictment on that topic. And secondly, it needs a conviction by a jury after a full trial. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, no obscenity. So that becomes extremely unlikely. But back to indecency. Now, the worst thing about this indecency, and it gets to the question you're asking, is determine what defines indecency. Indecency is defined as what is held to be indecent by three of the five commissioners of the FCC. Now, they don't have your cultural context. They're just making stuff up. And they're not, they specifically don't apply it according to local standards. Or according to the standards of the, you know, the cultural context in which this poetry occurs, or in which this speech is made or this recording is made, that is not necessarily relevant to their determination.
So the complaint would have to be made directly to the FCC, and then these commissioners would have to determine whether or not they're interested in pursuing the complaint.
There was a case about so-called bad music lyrics in Oregon. Where they busted a community licensee, and I can't remember the specific lyrics that were involved, but I was struck by the fact that it was a lot easier to find this indecent if you were homophobic than if you weren't homophobic. Now, can you say that to the commissioners? Yeah. Is it going to take you off the hook?
So that's a potential problem.
It was a Sarah Jones piece, Your Revolution, which was, again, a riff on Gil Scott-Heron piece, but she was sort of, amongst other things, addressing misogyny and sort of mainstream rap lyrics and reutilizing some of the terminology and saying, what isn't going to happen? And they played it, it was at KBOO, and they played it basically drive time, I think.
And somebody complained, and so they investigated and issued a fine, and then they spent a lot of money appealing that fine. So it consumed a lot of the radio station's resources.
Just a quick question. When I was in high school up near Boston, WERS, in Emerson College, late at night would have a hip-hop show, and they had a saying, like, WERS at late at night, the only radio station in the country licensed to use the F-word. I don't know where that came from, but they would. Like, late at, from 11 p.m. on, they'd have, like, how they got away with that. And high power, you know, 30 miles outside of Boston, and is that...
Well, this gets into the same part.
You add an extra E to the end.
Well, that implicates the safe harbor. When can you say these words? I mean, generally it's 10 till 6 when children are assumed to be asleep.
I can conceive of an abuse of the safe harbor, but I don't know of any cases.
So you're allowed to be indecent within the safe harbor?
Yes.
Even if the commissioners think it's indecent, it's not an issue because it was after 10.
Are there no rules at all in safe harbor? Or are there, well, I mean, can you do something in safe harbor? I mean, you know what I mean? Like, you can just do fuck for 8 hours from 10 to 6.
Use your personal life to yourself.
You know, I mean, fuck night, we're planning for February 21st.
Okay.
February 14th.
The statute says obscene or profane or indecent, and then they've started to enforce this indecent stuff. The profane thing, the classical word profane means outside of the temple. Well, they have no business applying a religious test, but they've interpreted profane narrowly to mean where some kind of speech could become a public nuisance. And I don't know of any cases in this area, but the unremitting word fuck for 8 hours in the same word might be, you may have actually put your finger on it. The one example where they could say, well, this isn't indecent, but it's profane because it's a public nuisance.
No David Mamet, even after 10, right?
As a specific example, one thing that we do is... because there's sort of the statutory elements in all of the FCC land, but then you exist within a community, and you want to develop a good bond with that community. So there's, for lack of a better phrase, you know, there's these considerations of the environment that you're in. And so one of the things that we do is we are much more hands-off in what producers put on the air in terms of pre-recorded content and things like that, but we don't allow our programmers to swear on the air, safe harbor or not. Just to separate them from the content that they're producing.
What about advocacy? Suppose, like, recently two old ladies got busted here for growing pot. Suppose he got on the radio and said, everybody go down to the state police headquarters and bring your marijuana and smoke it in the parking lot of the state police headquarters as a demonstration of solidarity, you know, with these women.
Well, that wouldn't be involved in decency. I think you might be getting into other promoting
editorial issues.
Editorial issues. So I think there's a couple other things that might attach to that. But maybe we can return to that. In terms of the indecency, the other thing I wanted to say for what we do, and I just forgot. Oh, well, I will say for myself, one of my plans is to do a show of nothing but bands whose names I can't say in the air and under our policies, and so just work through that. But under FCC guidelines, in safe harbor, I could. And so one thing we stress at our station is knowing that 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. and knowing that safe harbor division, which I think is pretty
important. I have a question. I'm from New Orleans. My name is Joy. One of the things that we want to do is, I don't know how many have been there, but New Orleans is kind of wild, okay, wide open, okay? And part of what I want to do is take the radio station out to the street and talk to the people that are out there. My question in regard to what you're talking about is, what if I put the mic to someone and they say fuck? Okay, where does that put me?
You mean you've just got an isolated instance of your interviewee says the word fuck, that's
right.
It. Okay,
right.
Well, I mean, is it being broadcast in the Second Circuit?
We are. We're in
New York
State.
She's in
New
Orleans.
No, New Orleans.
Or is it in New Orleans?
And is it live?
Yeah. Well, it wouldn't be live unless I am able to do it live from the street. If that's possible, and I wish somebody would tell me how to do that. But otherwise, you know, it would be played back. So what I'm trying to find out is my liability. In terms of, I mean, people are drunk, okay, and, you know, crazy, and they're liable to say anything. And mind you, these people are from Iowa and Utah, and they come there to let their hair down, okay? So if I'm out in the street and you know, they're showing their tits and dropping beads off and all of that kind of stuff, you know, as I am interviewing them, am I liable for their responses? To my question, you know?
We're not talking about your liability.
Yeah,
we've taken obscenity off the table. We're talking about indecency. That has to do with FCC enforcement as against their licensees. So there could be a license sanction or there could be a fine that would be applicable to the station. You personally? No.
Well, yeah, I'm talking about.
But we're hoping
the
you feel a personal responsibility to the station.
And the station has an obligation to establish a policy and enforce it. So if the policy is that you can't have any of these words on the station, then you go forward with your program, program director may write you a letter that says, well, you know, these are our guidelines, and you shouldn't have done that. You know, and maybe the next time we'll have to suspend you for a week or something. You know, but progressive discipline kind of thing. So the station needs to make a show of enforcing this kind of stuff at all times and paying attention when it happens. But if it's here in the Second Circuit and a little old fuck or shit slips by, I mean, it's not going to make any difference.
So in terms of, like, prime time, we talked about safe harbor. I'm just curious, like, and particularly not worried so much about anything, I would say, is the broadcaster, but in terms of the music that I might be playing and potentially lyrics that might be offensive to someone, has there been any trending in, like, the case law that, like, you know, community stations get a easier time of it than, you know, commercial?
Well, somewhat the opposite, based on the fact that they did this this KBOO enforcement action on a public radio station, which they should, it was a community station, they should never have done that. When there are shock jocks on the air day after day in morning drive time with the grossest kind of, sexual innuendo, and they're picking on this community radio station, that's ridiculous. But they did.
They fought back, and it cost. But a lot of the financial resources in fighting back
and time.
Yeah. I think the original fine was $7,000, and they spent somewhere close to $40,000 plus time to fight to challenge a $7,000 fine, which I believe was overturned.
Yeah,
but it has a really negative impact on the station's stability.
But if you pay the $7,000 fine, then that's one black mark against you, so that the next time.
Well, at renewal, that could come up and bite you. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And just keep in mind, though, you asked about trends. It has been over 2 years since the last new indecency fine that the FCC has not heard. So, I mean, I don't believe under Julius Janowski, the FCC has actually issued a new indecency fine. They're still doing all kinds of other fines, but...
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, it depends on who's on the FCC at any given time, and that could change in 2 years, and they could start cracking down on this stuff again.
Yeah.
And if it's within your 8-year renewal period, yeah, you've got to worry about that. Maybe... the thing is, a complainant doesn't have to... The Enforcement Bureau doesn't necessarily tell you who complained. Possible to do complaints that are kept anonymous, and they can sit there like a ticking time bomb against your renewal. So, in some
so
sense,
right to space your accuser is
it's administrative law. This is administrative.
Okay.
You have to use your judgment. If the if the incident occurs, and the incident, I mean, you've got to play a 3-minute track of a band, and there are 5 instances of fuck in that, or, you know, there's an interview, and some coarse language is used. Think about, what is the context? Is your show one that is going to appeal to adults? Is your show that it's going to appeal to a broad spectrum? Is it going to jar with your show, or is it going to be sort of congenial with the content so that a listener would not be disturbed? Or is it going to be like something that came out of the blue and slapped them in the face because it was so different from everything else in that time period? So that kind of context is not important from a legal standpoint, but it's important from the standpoint of who is likely to complain and what would get them so riled up. You know, you need strong motivation to sit down and write a letter to the FCC. So, are you going to provide the motivation or not?
Are most of these complaints, you think, driven by like incidents like that where someone hears something, or are they people that like get a burr against the station and look for things to find?
Often the latter.
That's what I'm thinking, yes.
I think that in most cases, in my experience, is that the people without the burr but just don't like what they hear will contact the station. And we've certainly gotten calls periodically over things that could potentially be applicable or oftentimes aren't. And then we just take it upon ourselves, you know, to get their contact information and then have somebody talk to them.
And that's actually useful to find out the community standard because it's community feedback.
Yeah.
Is there going to be a time delay so that we have a chance to dump whatever?
I'm not sure if that piece of equipment has been ordered, but it will be ordered, and it will be as soon as possible. We'll have a delay button, yes.
It so happens that in 2002, when Nicole Richie said this, Fox had a 5-second time delay, and they actually did bleep out something at the beginning of her statement, and then the time delay person fell asleep at the switch, okay? And the whole thing about the Prada purse came out.
So delay buttons aren't perfect.
But you can hit them twice.
So I'm curious, at WBCR then, what do you do when you get those kind of complaints in terms of modifying the
station? Oh, that's a great question.
Or,
yeah. I'd like to answer it more generally. When you do get complaints, formal complaints, and somebody takes the time to write to the station manager or gives you a detailed complaint over the telephone, even. Or more likely these days, you'll get a complaint by email. Do you throw it in the trash bin? No. It's really important to answer complaints and show that you care about that, because complaints are one of the valuable feedback mechanisms that you have from the public. And in most cases, probably 80-90% of the cases, if it's not somebody with bad motivation, they're just complaining because they didn't like the way something sounded or they were offended by it, you can address that, show that you care, and that you're responding to the complaint, even if the bottom line is that you disagree with the complainant. And in 90% of the cases, you've shut it down right there. There's not going to be a follow-up to the FCC.
Yeah, people want a sounding board. They want to be heard. That's basically what almost everybody wants, is to know that someone cared enough to listen.
Doesn't the FCC require you to keep all these comments for a certain number of years at the station in a file?
If you get a formal written complaint about programming, you're supposed to put it in the public file.
Right, just keep it and keep it. And keep
yeah.
it. Right.
We are.
Do disclaimers not work on radio?
Oh, well, you mean, all right,
like
parents strongly caution the next hour is going to contain some cuss words.
Exactly, yeah.
That's worthless.
Really?
Yeah, that's not going to help you.
We can't put on nautical music at 10 o'clock and say, woo, you've entered safe harbor, woo.
I like that idea. That's a great idea.
I do say, I mean, one thing that we talk about in terms of disclaimers is really not about preventing yourself in any legal way, again, but it's really about your connection with the community. And so we don't talk about disclaimers in relation to indecency, but we talk about disclaimers in relation to just content that may be disturbing. and always giving the listener the opportunity to opt out of that experience by subjecting them to it.
Well, I mean, like the Travel Channel, Anthony Bourdain, I mean, he's subject to do anything, okay? So they always put up the little disclaimer. And in other words, change the channel if you don't want to hear this, okay? And so why doesn't it work on radio?
It's never worked on radio. The classic case, the Carlin case, this guy was driving around, the complainant, this guy was driving around in a car with his kid, and George Carlin delivered his monologue, 7 dirty words that you can never say on television. And if you've ever heard the monologue, it is fabulous. It goes on for about 9 minutes. What was this guy's problem? Did he suffer an involuntary paralysis of the dialing finger? They kept listening and listening and listening, and then he went home and complained to the FCC. What kind of nonsense is that?
And I think that was an example of somebody who had an agenda and he was going after the station. They just happened to, you know.
And disclaimers, the most famous disclaimer is War of the Worlds. Orson Welles said over and over again, this is fake, this is fictional, and everybody still went crazy.
Well, most of them turned in late, they were listening to Charlie McCarthy, and then they turned over, but even in the center of the show after they destroyed New York, then all of a sudden, this is the Columbia Broadcasting System, and but people didn't know that, like, they had a commercial.
What kind of complaints do you get at DCR?
Most of our complaints are ideological in nature, because there is political programming, and so that... I will say that one of the shows, and this is getting slightly off topic, but it's Taking Aim, which is produced at BAI in New York, and I'm forgetting the language of how they describe themselves, but they talk quite often about Israeli-Palestinian issues, and they are arguably anti-Zionist in terms of a functional approach. And within our Jewish communities, that tends to elicit a pretty strong negative reaction. And so we actually facilitated some forum and invited people who are concerned to come to the programming committee meetings. We talk about the issues, talk about what our programming concepts are, how we can get them, if they have differing opinions, how we can get them involved in the discussion, in the discourse, and really work that stuff together. But that is... it's about community relations.
Can I ask just like a rule of thumb question? So community standards are not published. They're vague, they're floating, and you get a sense of it, but you could be wrong. So basically, me as a broadcaster, I shouldn't curse. If I feel really compelled to play something with cursing in it, do it between 10 and 6, but the less that I play, the less likely anyone will complain. And if I want to play a show that's only songs by the Butthole Surfers and Fuck and whatever else, I'm asking for
trouble. Move that into the...
Go to like... Can you say that?
Where you started with community standards? Community standards are irrelevant. The important thing is what is considered indecent by a vote of 3 out of the 5 FCC commissioners based on their judgment of what's indecent, not based on what your community judges.
So is a station going to have a profile of whatever 3 are sitting on the in your circuit at that time?
Well, really, from the station's point of view, you don't even want to get to that place.
Yeah,
you want so don't curse.
It's very hard to actually have this stuff happen. That's the thing. Really, it's like driving your car down the wrong side of the throughway. I think the real issue is going to be with ideological stuff, with things people disagree with that in their mind is offensive, that doesn't actually violate any rule, or in the case of art, where there's something in context. I think that's where the station's policy has to really ski between the moguls, whatever they are.
And that's where you're going to run into people who are going to complain. But the FCC is somewhat protective of the First Amendment. And, I mean, I've deal with this because I filed a lot of petitions to deny against Clear Channel stations, against shock jocks and stuff that was just really insulting and offensive. And, you know, they shut it down. They fined the station over some minor public file issues, maybe some minor swearing. But what happens is... they'll get you on the technicalities. The people who are complaining about the content, editorial content, they're not going to get very far with the commission because they're going to say, look, we don't interfere with stations and what the content that they broadcast, you know, unless it's indecent or something like that. So it's really on things like the public file or other areas where they will actually get you. As long as you're adhering to the indecency rules and not doing anything that's going to just fall into the lap of your opponents, you should be okay.
Yeah, it's like my right-wing Republican colleague when I was at the commission, who's now in the audio division, by the way. He will be assigned these indecency cases, and he will think of everything he possibly can to avoid a fine because he doesn't believe they should be doing this.
So I have a question. Maybe it's actually directed more to Tom. I mean, like for GXC, if you play a song that could be perceived by some as like mildly sexually suggestive or something, and I'm just thinking of what you described as like, okay, say the person complains, and I guess I don't know, the responsibility falls on a complaints department in combination with the broadcaster or whatever to respond to that. I mean, what's the likely upshot in terms of, you know, changes to the programming guidance, or I mean, you may not have sort of worked that all out in terms of the station board, in terms of that kind of thing.
I'm not sure what the question is exactly.
Well, like say the station's guidelines are okay. You shouldn't say anything that's indecent or profane. Something as general as that, and then we start to get like, you know, certain segments of the community will complain that, well, I don't like this broadcaster's programming because it's indecent, it's sexually suggestive, or whatever. What do you see as the likely way that those things will be addressed here at GXC?
Our board is still working on programming policy, so we haven't came up with official policy yet. This conversation and many others are informing that,
yeah.
So we're getting to that. And then the board, I assume, will make changes on the fly, kind of, when need be, if situations arise. Like, I guess that's what your question is getting at. Like, what... We don't want to punish programmers if they're not really doing anything wrong, but they get us in a situation. So that's not going to be our thing. If you play a song that, like the KVU in Oregon situation, if somebody played that song and we got into that situation, I wouldn't feel like it was the programmer's fault, really, because the intention was the opposite of the fine. It was a feminist song. That was the message, and it had been kind of being fined as being for the opposite. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
You let's say you have a show that is programmed, created by kids at the high school, and it's addressed to a high school audience. They want to do a segment on sex education, abstinence, birth control. Well, how can you not, you know, get into the subject? You're going to be talking about a sensitive subject, but should that be discouraged? I don't think so. I think it's an important part of the public service that the station is going to provide to be open to that kind of a thing. You need to use good judgment in the way you've shaped that program so it's not offensive. It will absolutely offend some people, but that's just tough luck. It's part of the public service that you're providing.
The FCC rules on using words relating to sexual or excretory functions provide an exception for any medical context. But in addition to that, the Supreme Court in this last year has been actually talking about this to the point that Justice Scalia actually asked the FCC why the S word is banned, and they gave their blubbering explanation. And, you know, the Justice Scalia asked, why not poop? Children use the word poop all the time. It's four letters. It means the same thing. What's going on here?
Yeah.
This is the Supreme Court.
Those things get shit
And so this is an evolving issue, and this is relating to the thing that basically, you know, two powerhouses, the FCC, went after Fox. And they wanted to be able to bang Fox really hard for Fox using a fleeting expletive, you know, like, for example, being on the street in the quarter and interviewing somebody, and then they drop a word that you can't bleep because it just happens too fast, or you just don't do it because it's whatever, you're interviewing people. And the basic outcome of that, in my perspective, is that the Supreme Court told the FCC, you can't do that, forget it, you know. If people at the station are making a good faith effort to do proper programming and something slips through, you can't go after them for that.
That's the Nicole Richie that we were talking about before. The Supreme Court hasn't ruled on it yet. They've ruled on the Administrative Procedure Act portion of it. But they may yet rule on the indecency portion.
They kind of punt it the first amendment.
Well, the other half of what I wanted to say was that not everybody has $40,000 to fight an improper charge like KBOO did, but it's everybody's responsibility to fight for the right thing, and that means doing your station in a reasonable way and not letting any of these rules keep you from doing something that you really need to do for your station, like interviewing people on the street. And if something comes along and you wind up in trouble, other stations will come to your support, and there's plenty of groups, and even the ACLU, who knows, will come in and help.
Okay.
So don't worry about it.
I want to potentially change the topic because I think we're sort of starting to rehash some common area. This is the most exciting thing to talk about, I think, in all this.
Well, topic. I have a thing about content, just a quick thing about content. The third part of Miller is it's literary, artistic, what would it
political,
be? Political, merit, area, you know, scientific, right?
Yeah.
Right, without any merit. If I wanted to put on Something Last Summer by Tennessee Williams, it's about homosexuality, it has cannibalism, it has lobotomies, it's a stuff. Good time is had by all. But I can make the point that it's Tennessee Williams. It is recognizable literary merit. Suppose I have a script by a young playwright, unknown, that deals with the same things. And by the way, in Something Last Summer, not a word you couldn't repeat to your grandmother. And the same thing. The language is temperate, but the subject matter is provocative. And I'm deliberately doing it because it is a well-written script, and it is provocative. Somebody can complain. They can be offended. They can complain. That third part seems very vague. How do you judge that? How do you make a judgment call on that and not get into trouble?
Well, that's still dealing with obscenity.
It's obscenity. I think when you're looking at it in decency, it's really, you know, sexual excretory.
Sexual predator in that one. How I Learned to Drive, that play. It's about incest.
I think you just have to make a judgment call as to whether or not to put it in the safe harbor based on, you know, is it going to be just so titillating and drive somebody to complain?
Are you
going to
say
pee-pee
and poop versus piss and shit?
Well, actually, the prohibited words are something that they settled on because it was so easy to apply. I mean, this is a very hard area to apply anything.
Yeah, I said the language is clean. Language is absolutely
your
clean.
Examples are good ones because they found these seven dirty words actionable because it was something that an idiot could apply to programming and make a determination. But then they start walking down that road and it leads to absurd results. So now they have ruled that bullshit is prohibited but pissed off is okay. Really? Seriously?
Well, it's solid versus liquid.
So this is one of the seven. This is one of the seven.
So,
I wanted to make sure because there are other areas that the FCC will exercise oversight of in what you do on the air, and I'd love to make sure that we touch on some of those topics. One of the ones that comes to my head immediately is. Telephone callers and recorded conversations, and I know there were a couple of cases in the last year or so that touched on telephone calls, and I don't know if either one of you want to speak to that before I give my uneducated spiel.
There are both federal and state laws applicable. If you broadcast a telephone conversation without permission, you can be subject to a substantial FCC fine.
Permission from
the caller.
Okay.
The caller or the person that you called in the interview, which is even, you know, if you're calling a radio station, you may have less of a claim that it was that you were caught by surprise when this went on the air. But if you are calling to interview somebody for a news program, you certainly want to make sure if you're going to use it that you get permission. But there are also state laws about recording one side of telephone conversation without the permission of the other side. And that depends from state to state. I don't know what.
We're in a one-side state here, but still for basic journalistic ethics.
And I think, and there's
you
a
yeah. announce, you say what you're doing.
Yeah, that's part of our journalism policy is going to be that you have to tell people that you're recording.
You always tell people.
Well, what constitutes permission?
Yeah, is it verbal, written?
Well.
on telephone conversation?
You can record them saying, sure, no problem.
I'm recording this for air. Is that okay with you?
Okay.
All right. I mean, it doesn't have to be elaborate. It might have to be more than that. If you were trying to craft it into a segment for NPR, they might demand to see all the consents in writing. You know, but for purposes of your nightly news, local news, probably getting a permission that way is responsible. You might want to make a note that you've done it too. That wouldn't be bad.
There were a couple of fines that I saw that the FCC had issued. One related to a DJ that had played on air a recording that had been left, I think, on his personal voicemail, and the station actually got a fine for that after a complaint. And there was another one where I think the caller who was already on air rescinded permission and asked to be taken off the air, and they weren't removed. And don't hold me to this because I'm not a lawyer, but I'm pretty sure that was my mistake.
Yeah, I think there was one instance where they led the listener to believe that they were on mute or pause or something, but they continued to broadcast and they made fun of them, and they got fined for doing that.
Should have been fined for doing that.
Yeah.
I mean,
that makes more sense because you can hang up if you want to get
But oftentimes you want to speak to a human at the station, but not on air. One of the policies that we have is when you put someone on air, if they're calling in, if you take the call not in air first, we always have our programmers let the caller know that the next time I'm talking to you is going to be on the air, if that's okay with you. And if they take the call directly on the board, the first thing they say is, you know, this is blah, 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 you are now on the air. And giving the caller the opportunity to opt out before they speak. So that's how we try to deal with that.
You had something earlier and you got...
Yeah, I was asking about it. You know, in any case, if you were, say you said, like we said, had this recent case in the paper where these elderly women were arrested for, in two separate cases, for...
The incitement issue.
Legal, okay.
You know, you're incited, so then, you know, obviously stated, you know, in the article, in the paper, that, you know, this marijuana is considered criminal, and they list the history of these kind of helicopter busts they made, and they say, you know, if you have any info, they give you a number, you know, if you want to drop a dime on anybody. So suppose, you know, if someone was to go on the station and say, this is outrageous, you know, and, you know, editorialize, you know, without profanity or whatever, but then at the end say, you know, we need people to go to the state police headquarters out on Route 9 at noon tomorrow and bring your weed and light up.
That's considered a call to action.
I can give you a concrete example because there's a station in Humboldt County, KMUD, where they broadcast these reports that went during the season when the campaign against marijuana planting rolls around with their vans and their helicopters and their spraying and everything. The station goes on the air and says, well, watch out because the camp vans are in Redway this morning driving up and down so-and-so street. And I guess that if your growing activity is not substantial enough, you can try to dispose of it. If it's a half of an acre in the house, it's going to be tough. If they knock on the door, there's not much you can do about it. But anyway, there was a local police chief who went to the station and complained that, you know, you're promoting illegal activity and undermining law enforcement here. And they said, look, we've been putting these reports on our news for the past 25 years, and no one's ever complained about it, and it's a public safety issue because these camp van drivers are pretty sloppy and they may run into somebody, and it's good to know where they are, so we try to let people know to clear the highway when they're around. And the whole thing just kind of fizzled at that point.
They couch them in terms of traffic reports.
Yeah.
I'm wondering about like violence or incitement to violence or whatever on the air. Like, say, right-wing radio host after 9/11 says, you know, get every single brown-looking person out of the corner store and shoot them or something, you know? Like, where's it, like...
Well, you're not playing put that on me.
No. I'm just wondering what the law says about, like, that kind of thing.
Well, there have been. There have been things about Obama. There have been things about... And Rush Limbaugh said one of them. I mean, Glenn Beck said one of them. And nothing.
Everybody screams and nothing happens.
Also, keep in mind the FBI actually pays provocateurs to do hate radio. This is documented. Tax dollars at work, sorry.
I don't know of any FCC enforcement on the violence side as opposed to the sex side. In fact, I wish they'd start doing something about violence and leave the sex alone.
I mean, there are criminal laws that say I forget the legal standard, but if it's a call to action to incite violence and there's a likelihood that people will actually follow you and do something, it's a criminal violation.
The station can have a policy on this.
So call to action to do something illegal is actually illegal.
Right, yelling fire in a crowded theater is illegal.
Right.
A call to action to do something illegal, I mean, you know, to say I want people to go out and broadcast without a license and engage in civil disobedience, that's not a crime. But if it's going to lead, you know, I want somebody to assassinate the president, and this is how we're going to do it, at that point, that's certainly a crime that could, you know, get the FBI involved. So it's, you know, what's the likelihood of people, you know, is it speech or is it directing somebody to do something that's illegal. I don't know where the line is. It's not my
area. It's vague a little bit, and it just kind of depends on what you're doing.
If it's a credible threat, then
credible threat. That was the thing Limbaugh had.
There's the thing with the guy who killed the abortion doctor.
Yeah.
There was somebody went on the thing and said he is a public enemy number one. He deserves to be taken out.
This is a national right.
Yeah. And the guy went and did it. Yeah. I mean, he went and did it. Now, was that an incitement to what?
But you have to look how much money's behind these stations.
I know.
How much litigation
of
they can hold up behind. You
right.
know, and
of course.
They got millions of dollars to go to court and keep people in court forever.
Right.
We don't have that. We've got to have a policy. You know, we're not going to cite people. We're not going to...
But why wasn't that a criminal offense is what my...
Oh, it should
asking.
Have been.
Mm-hmm. You know,
it should
and
have
it
been.
Wasn't.
It's a hate crime.
Right.
I didn't know that was going to happen if I said that. I didn't.
We're not talking about broadcasting. Remember, we're talking about something that was on a website.
No, I've heard. I thought it was.
No, there was.
There was a
story recently. I think it was in Florida, where the DJ said something, and I remember the word "credible threats" came up or something like that.
So, is there a difference between what's on a website and
in terms of regulation?
Yes.
Yeah, because the reason the FCC regulates the airwaves is there's this concept, and it maybe used to be true, maybe not so much now, that there's scarcity on the airwaves, and we can only allow so many people to broadcast. Therefore, we have to regulate the airwaves, and in regulating it, we have control over what you can say in certain contexts, like obscenity or indecency. None of that applies to cable, none of that applies to the internet. But we're just talking about broadcasting on TV or broadcasting on radio.
The question, though, I had, I don't know if it's maybe, like, I'm saying, you know, I'm telling people to go to the police headquarters and commit a criminal act, smoke marijuana. So if people go and do that, can the radio station be liable, is DJ liable, or I could say, go and march down Warren Street. And if you don't, you know, technically, if you don't have a permit to assemble, then I'm inciting people to commit a criminal act. You know, if I say go block traffic at the intersection, you know, 4th Street and Warren or wherever, you know. So if you're saying these kinds of things, you know, they're not, you know, I know like everyone's getting into these extreme cases, but I'm talking about, you know, basically inciting people to civil disobedience that is technically found illegal. Could they hold, you know, if they went back to it and said, you know, if there was someone on the radio who, like, said, go and block the intersection at 7th Street and Warren, could the station be held liable? Would DJ be held liable? Or is that just not really, you know, can they say that
you're
inciting a riot
probably,
or inciting...
You can go back over the whole history of the civil rights movement and pluck out all kinds of examples that go one way or the other, especially given the atrocious conduct of local authorities during that whole era. But I think the important thing is that you really want to stay out of situations like that if you think that there could be legal repercussions, because then they become a distraction from what your point was originally.
The interesting thing about this is that generally you want to have a policy against having calls to action, which is what you're describing, because you have no idea once you call that action, what the repercussions of it can be. I mean, people can get harmed, people can get, you know, and then it comes back. You don't know. You've lost control once you've called something to action. You've lost control once it's gone out on the air. You don't know how people are going to interact once they do what they feel that, you know, they respect you, they respect your voice or your show, and they may act on that, and then you have no control anymore. And it could be a problem, a violent act, or somebody could get harmed.
Is there a generic standard SOP? For radio stations, I mean, or has GXC put something together?
Well,
like,
you know, different stations. I've got a couple examples here of station handbooks that have evolved, and probably you're going to have one too.
We've been working on it. Yes,
and I can provide some ours as well. I only have on
I think we have copies of yours already.
Great.
And typically, you'll get your policies worked out in a handbook like this, and then before anyone goes out in the air, they're given a copy of it and have to sign acknowledgement of your seat. So
I want to know how does the law apply to Spanish language?
What part of it? These rules?
Yeah, what have you talking about?
Is there anything different for different languages at all?
No, not in indecency or in the underwriting rules.
But
no,
is
there
a rule
the,
for words that you cannot say in Spanish or something like that?
Well, I don't know whether they've evolved the protocol.
But
to,
does
you know,
it exist or not?
Here's a list of the 7 dirty words in 110 languages. I don't think they've worked that out yet.
It doesn't exist. Okay.
But if somebody complains, you spoke Spanish and heard it. There's no distinction in terms of what language the words are being said in, or whether it's underwriting or GCC.
Tits.
Tits.
Tits is a dirty word.
Now you'll never forget.
What about like plug ola?
That was going to be the name of your show.
On Bourbon Street every night. Show your tits. Show your tits. You get beeps. You know. I never knew that was a dirty word.
I'm sorry, but bureaucrats in D.C. know the community standard better than the people in your community. So, sorry.
Yeah, so do you want to touch on Payola and Plugola?
I mean, briefly, I mean, the FCC does have rules about accepting consideration where you have to, you know, if you're given something, programming, you know, tickets, things like that that are in exchange for promoting or plugging something, you have to identify the sponsor or the person. And it's to avoid situations like, you know, in the 50s up through, you know, the present day where there's this sort of hidden thing going on where, you know, the station is plugging something, but the audience doesn't know it. So these rules are really, it's kind of a consumer protection kind of thing. The plug-ola rules are there to prevent, say, somebody, one of your programmers owns a record company, and they just play exclusively their records, or just quite a few of their records, and that those records are being sold. They have to, you really want to have a policy that prevents that, first of all. If anyone is broadcasting anything where they have a commercial interest in it.
We're working on that policy because we have several examples of potential conflicts of that sort.
And really the best way, I mean, this NFCB book is a really good thing to have around because it gives you examples of what is. And is
we have that in that file cabinet there,
They're really fact-specific situations, but generally you want to avoid a situation where somebody's giving you something, you know, like 20 copies of the same record, you know, and 19 are going to the record store, you know, to this guy, you know, personally, and then he's plugging it on the radio. The specifics, I don't do this so much, so I don't know if you know more of the kind of nuance of what the disclaimers are.
Well, maybe the underwriting rules are perhaps beyond the scope of this, but any consideration that comes in, monetary or non-monetary, triggers the obligation to disclose the source. And the wording of that disclosure is governed by some fairly intricate rules called the underwriting rules. And we talked about this in the other session, and I think the way the only thing that I need to say right here about that is that underwriting announcements ought to be subject to close control by the program director as something that is scripted in advance and approved before it's read. Nobody goes on and says, well, we're grateful for the support by so-and-so bakery down the street, and we encourage you to go over there and get a muffin. That kind of thing is potentially very dangerous unless it's within the underwriting rules, and that's something that would be carefully controlled and carefully scripted to make sure it's within FCC compliance. It's not something for programmers to get into on their own.
Yeah, and we do have that policy in place. One of our board members takes care of all the text for underwriting.
Because NPR's loosened it up a little bit in the last 10, 15 years, but it used to be that when you were underwritten, it was basically the name of your company and substantially what you did. You couldn't, and your slogan, you couldn't say the best something. You couldn't say that. That's a commercial.
Yeah, you can't say price. You can't say a call to action.
And not just underwriting. You can't say that about things in general. Like, you can't, when you're just doing your show, you can't talk about the grocery store down the street being the best in town, or is that just with underwriting? You can make qualitative
statements. Well, if the grocery store, you know, that the last fundraiser, they showed up with a plate of goodies, then the rule's triggered by that exchange of consideration and acknowledgement, so you've got a serious problem right there. And
they do that on KZE all the time.
They do it on AMC all the time.
But KZE is commercial.
They do what?
KZE is commercial. AMC is not.
AMC is not, and what happens is...
So what's the we're non-commercial, so what is the rule for us?
Well, commercial isn't subject to underwriting rules at all.
Right.
They're commercial.
This is a really important area, I feel, because, like, just for casually talking on the air, and I want to say, like, say I'm talking or whatever, talking about this morning. Like, I got my coffee this morning from Strong Tree. God, I love that place.
That's going to happen all
great
the time
coffee.
Because the kind of businesses that underwrite are the kind of that are involved in the community and are doing things. That your example
right.
is going to happen over and over again.
Right. The one I think of often is Helsinki. Yeah.
Right, and the difference is, so for instance, AMC, they have the guy out from the brew pub all the time. They and Joe Donahue will say, oh, you ever been to the brew pub? Oh, the best beer. I just love their beer. And they will underwrite, but they don't underwrite that segment. They'll underwrite 2-4 hours later.
Yeah, well, that's kind of sticky. Yeah.
But they do it all the time. They have
well, what to. What you
They do that too.
Well, the problem too is if you really like Strong Tree's coffee and it's like part of your show to talk about the things that you did that day, then that's a natural part of your show.
Right. We're like, I went to the farm over there and got some apples. These apples are the best, you know. Like.
It's
gray area.
You get a complaint from some other coffee place.
It's a complaint-based system, like the indecency. It's a complaint-based system.
But what if you broadcast from a place, an establishment?
Well, you can be descriptive. You can say we're broadcasting here from the Helms Bakery in downtown, whatever. That's fine, but it's when you start getting into these qualitative type of statements.
But it's really just all complaint-based. So if he says, oh, I just had some great apples from Roxbury Farm, if the guy at Love Apple gets a bug up his butt and starts calling up, going, ah, they're always broadcasting from there.
Exactly.
Then you have a problem.
So exactly.
Something like that's probably not good.
That's pretty unlikely, isn't it? I mean,
that could be a good show, Love Apple versus Roxbury, like the throwdown show.
What if you're at a place and you go and interview the people there? And they're like raving about it or not. You know, that's along the same lines. It's not you, but it's your.
Well, what kind of questions are you posing that get that kind of?
Well, how did you? So you go to Tortilla Bell and you ask,
what did you have to?
Yeah. How was it? Would you recommend, like?
Why would you be asking those questions?
People want to know. The segment is walking down the
street. Or you go to Strong Tree and you're interviewing the owner of Strong Tree. So how do you roast your beans? Well, first of all, we pick only the finest beans and we take our care and we want to make the best coffee possible. That's a qualitative...
Well, that's a journalism.
Yeah. Well, first of all, remember we're talking about people who are providing services or goods or consideration to your station. You can have a restaurant review program or a business, you know, interview programs. And that's journalism, and you can have people talking about these things.
Or suppose somebody provides, this happens on AMC all the time too, they provide lunch Ichiban provides lunch for AMC, and they say, what about this delicious lunch we had from Ichiban? Yay! You know,
wait. you know, there's one aspect of this, which is the FCC rules and regulations about underwriting announcements, and so, you know, maybe you can, like, weasel out of it because the program segment that's supported is not the one where you're flogging this merchant. But there's a really bigger question here, and that is, what do you want your air sound to be like? What do you want your station to represent? Do you have goals for the programming service that you're providing? And is this kind of stuff consistent with the goals or inconsistent with it? Does it sound wrong at the very minute that it's uttered? Does it sound too much like the station that you're talking about? Does it sound like it's not where we want to go with this station? Because you are responsible as a licensee to program the station as you see fit in the public interest, and that means that it should be interesting, informative, controversial.
And part of WGXC's goals are about helping and incubating local businesses. So that seems to include pretty much anything that we've discussed here.
Okay, so if for instance, there's a festival, okay, and the radio station goes out and, you know, to the festival, and you're talking to people about why you came out and are you having a good time and what did you eat, you know, I mean, are we walking a fine line here?
Yes.
Oh my.
This is crazy. So we kind
of. Is there a fund to get me out of jail?
Let's try this one. This Sunday, the 27th, the Fiesta Sundays in Old Town come to an end. Live music from 2 until 6 at night on Old Town's principal stage with La Señora de Orlando. Live transmissions through 88.7 FM. Fiesta Sundays in Old Town. With crafts, 70 specialized tables, site restaurants, and 18 amusement park rides. Don't forget Old Town, 1 mile east from I-4, exit 64A on Route 192. Kissimmee. Information 407-396-4888. The Enforcement Bureau translated this announcement from the Spanish and busted them with a fine.
For what?
No, wait, this was, don't want to confuse people, this was underwriting, not a host speaking extemporaneously.
This was an underwriting
message that the station actually put on the show. So it's not you talking about the festival that would get you in trouble. It's if the station itself, if we screw up and approve an underwriting statement.
Well, but in
like
theory,
that.
If you were going through this riff spontaneously with the same content, you could have a problem if they're an underwriter. Okay, if they're not,
or if they donated.
What was the problem with that? I didn't hear any qualitative words.
Was
it
those amusement park rides or what was it? Call to action.
I don't get it.
Call to action.
Really?
Oh, get out of here.
If they're an underwriter, why is that problematic?
WAMC is the big public station. They've got stations all over the area, and that kind of stuff is all over.
So I think what that suggests is, because, you know, you see it, particularly in NPR stations and PBS stations, they're constantly figuring out how close to the lines that they can get. But again, it is complaint driven. So the likelihood of something happens is fairly minimal, but you should know where the hazy lines or clear lines, depending.
So if you spread it around your businesses enough and you get everybody, nobody's going to complain, so you...
Well, that's not a legal point.
No.
That's a policy point. And you could bring that up with the program director and the policy group and decide that that's what you want to do. Or not. You're starting up a station here and you're making policy from scratch. And you want your air to be a certain way. You want to show a certain integrity. You don't want everybody flogging their favorite coffee house necessarily. Or maybe you do. I don't know. But that's, you know, you've got to have that discussion. You've got to come up with some guidelines.
I wanted to know, are you going to touch on music programming with the time we have left?
What aspect?
Well, I wanted to know about the FCC ruling about playing music by an artist repetitively. So
for instance, if you have a show that's called, say, Simply Sinatra, like Don Del Pies in Massachusetts, it's all Sinatra for the 3 hours that he has the show. But, say, a community person wants to play three or four songs by the same artist, it's their birthday. Is that, if I understand this correctly, you're not supposed to do that on internet radio or non-commercial radio. Non-commercial radio.
Separate
issues.
I don't think there's anything that would prohibit you from a broadcast standpoint from having an entire show of Sinatra or the Beatles or anything, you know, okay. Beatles Sunday. On the internet, currently in the U.S., you have to pay royalties for broadcasting a song, but not for the recording. However, when you're streaming on the internet, you do have to pay royalties, and there's something called a compulsory royalty, where as long as you pay a certain rate to the certain people, they let you use the recording for streaming purposes. But those rules are a little bit tricky, and they say you can't play like three songs by the same artist within 3 hours, or you can't play two songs in a row from the same album, or you can't play four songs from a box set in 4 hours. This was back in the 90s when the record industry was scared that internet streaming was going to destroy the industry. They have bigger fish to fry now. And I'm not aware of anyone who's ever been sued over playing four songs by the Beatles in 3 hours that went over the air and then was streamed at the same time.
Because we'll be doing both. We'll be live and we'll be streaming.
Yeah. But technically, because you're streaming, you do have to watch out for playing. If that's the case, are you going to be streaming here?
We are, yeah. And yeah. So you're saying the FUV does Thelonious Monk's birthday every year, all day Thelonious Monk. They turn off their web stream?
They don't.
Well,
right.
What you can do is you can get permission from the record label if everything that Thelonious Monk did is on Sony. Otherwise, you got to go to Sony, you got to go to Blue Note, you got to go.
Right.
And that's, you know, just to get the record companies to get back to you will be 6 months.
Right.
Also, the enforcement on the DMCA, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, which set these limits on what you can do, is very, very lax. That doesn't mean that these rules don't exist. It's federal law. But there are not, it's not like you guys are getting calls every week saying, We streamed too many Bob Dylan songs in the noon hour.
The people with standing to go after you would be the owners of the recordings. So it would be Columbia, it would be Blue Note, it would be whoever. They're not going to go after a community station that's actually playing their music for copyright infringement actions, trying to put you out of business.
But keep in mind, this is not FCC.
You're advertising for
them. Yeah.
This
so,
is a case where it's not FCC policy.
Yeah,
FCC
we're not talking
not
FCC, we're talking
about
songs
you play by Bob Dylan.
The people who have the rights here are the copyright owners of the recordings or the music.
So the FCC is not involved. If someone wants to make a complaint, it wouldn't be to the FCC?
They'd complain. If I was going after your station as a listener over this, I'd call it Columbia Records and say, hey, they're playing like five Bob Dylan songs in 3 hours. That's a violation of the DMCA. And then Columbia Records would have, or Sony, would have to decide if they even care.
Okay.
And then they'd have to sue you.
And then they'd have to sue you, which is a lot of money, and then they'd probably have to face all the wrath of people
so it's,
knowing that they're trying to put your station.
It's not something we should be concerned about.
Right.
You should be concerned about it in that, you know, it might eat up some administrative resources to deal with whoever is collecting on their
behalf. Should basically have a policy that says we don't want to do it unless there's a circumstance that requires when Bob Dylan dies, we might be playing Bob Dylan a lot that day.
There might even be some weird exception about the death of an artist somewhere in that legislation. I don't even know, but it would make a lot of sense.
You should specifically make an exemption for Bob Dylan in your policy.
But it's also when artists are in the area, whether it's music or performing arts, to talk about them for a length of time. That's my question.
Well, absolutely. If there's an artist playing across the street, that artist might, you might say, play us four songs, you know, in this next hour that you want us to hear. And, you know, I don't think the artist record company is going to come after you for that.
I don't see the difference in playing their music for 10 minutes or interviewing them for 10 minutes. You're dedicating time to one person or one topic, so.
The copyright interest is quite different.
Yeah, the artist may not own the copyright to that artist's recording. And so, I mean, what we're doing here, and I should maybe mention this, because copyright's really important. You do have the right, as long as you're paying ASCAP, BMI, CSAC, to play their music on the air, to use it as a header for a program or as a bed for your underwriting. If you're streaming and you're paying the royalties, you have the right to do that. When you're paying ASCAP, BMI, you're not really acquiring the rights to use a poem by Allen Ginsberg or Lorca, something like that. there are rules that allow for the fair use rules that allow for using certain excerpts in certain situations, but those fair use rules are really a gray area. They're case by case, they're hard to follow, they're hard to predict how the court would come out. Basically, you want to avoid, like, a Tennessee Williams play, you know, if you're going to be reading that on the air, you probably got to get permission.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. The same with news, you know. Copyright protects works of expression that are original, that are embodied in a tangible medium. Certain things copyright doesn't protect are facts, so the facts of somebody's life story or the facts in a news article aren't protected, but a news story, the way you assemble those facts, or a biography, the way you put those facts together, are protected. So you can't just go out and read, you know, whatever the local newspaper is. You can't just read from start to finish a news story on the air. You can extrapolate those facts, turn that into a news story, say today the local paper reported the following. But, well, if you're paying AP, then you're getting the right. You have a license to use that. So, you know, for news, public affairs, you know, it's just important to, you know, excerpt the facts out and create those news stories with a little bit of a twist, you know.
This brings up an interesting point that ties all of our topics together, because the FCC will rarely, if ever, do an enforcement action that is where there's a complaint that's not based on documentation, like an air check. What is this?
That mean?
Hey guys, just so you know, we have about 5 minutes to be done and 10 minutes to actually clear out, because the studio operations need to be able to do some work that would require us.
A complainant who just says, "I heard this," the 7 dirty words one after another, will not get any attention, but if they furnish a recording of the air, that's a different story. Which means that if you are streaming, it's instantaneous, like listening to the radio, but if you are podcasting or if you're archiving shows for a couple of weeks, there they are in all their glory, with all the bad words, with all the underwriting violations, with any other problem that may exist in the show. And if you have a problem, you have to pay attention to that fact that the complainant may have access to the material after
and
the fact.
Further,
are we going to be archiving?
We are going to be archiving. And further, we may be buying a piece of equipment that let us record everything for 3 years in half-hour segments. So that is that a bad idea? Because that creates a record for... I'm talking about not posting everything. But
no, I'm talking about the religious loony out there.
Right, we're
going to
post
something, and then
we're
going to
post as many things as possible.
Public archive and download it to support a complaint.
Does the thing about suddenly last summer? Does that apply to any published
work? Any copyright?
Well,
copyrighted
works in theory fall in the public domain, but in practice. Currently, anything before 1923 is public domain. Anything after that, all bets are off unless you do some investigation.
Getting the permissions to do that.
So we are going to start wrapping up. So we are going to start wrapping up. You know, these are perpetual discussions, and I know I have lots of questions still, and you guys are going to continue having discussions. You already have a copy of the NFC handbook?
I believe we do, yes.
Which is
we're a member of NFCB, so if we don't have it, we can easily get one. But I believe we have it.
Okay. And I will say that in a completely non-legal sort of person on the street role, I'm happy to talk to people, but my advice is, or what we do is not legal. Not that what we do is legal, but that, you know, don't take what we do as being legal.
You're not lawyers.
Really
valuable. You've done a great job today.
So. Thank you. Yeah, but they both have worked in these areas professionally, and maybe you guys have carved your ways to contact.
And if you guys didn't know, Michael and Alan both worked on our application that was successful, so they are as responsible as anybody else for WGXC being on the air right now.
Nice. And there is another topic that I don't think we're going to have time to get into that I just wanted to mention, which is political programming. Now, I think you might be safe in the fact that you're not going to be broadcasting before Election Day. So, maybe. Hopefully you are.
But we're probably aren't. This year, yes.
But I think that by the time you get to the next election cycle, that how you handle political candidates is worth really.
Yeah, we've already done the League of Women Voters debates on the internet, and we're going to have a couple programs that may be elected to office, and so we need a policy about keeping them off the air for X number of months around election time.
This has really good stuff on it.
Yeah.
It does, great.
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone, sorry, but the studio people asked if you're not going to work on studio work now. But you, I don't.